Honors.
Good morning.
Jason Nielsen on behalf of Mr. Cruz Rodriguez. May it please the court and counsel. I'm here today for my client Alvaro Cruz Rodriguez. He unfortunately cannot be here today as he is in Mexico having been deported from the United States after the Board of Immigration Appeals rendered its decision ordering him removed. That is related to the first case and before us. The second case was decided by the board after his removal. If the standard of review in this matter, matters of law and constitutional issues are reviewed de novo by this court regarding the motion to reopen and reconsider, a part of the 183164 are reviewed for abuse of discretion. I believe that's Gulid from this circuit. And the interpretation of the board by the board of regulations and evidence is under the substantive evidence standard. The heart of this is procedural due process, and were the proceedings before the agency fair and just? In this case, they were not. From the outset, Mr. Cruz Rodriguez was detained in 2017 by Dakota County by the West St. Paul Police Department upon allegations by third parties of domestic abuse. Mr. Cruz Rodriguez and his wife owned a restaurant in West St. Paul. Mr. Cruz Rodriguez came here as a minor. He began working here in the United States, built a family, built his life, and then in his 40s, this event occurred. ICE detained him, took him from the jail in Dakota County, and then did not permit him to appear in his criminal matter, despite four orders from the state of Minnesota ordering the Department of Homeland Security and ICE to produce him for court. Their excuse was, we don't have time. We don't have time to afford this individual his constitutional right to appear in criminal court. That let these allegations, which were false, untrue, and not substantiated by the evidence, to be used against him, causing him to have to make himself, prove himself innocent of the allegations.
But the IJ and the board could consider the underlying conduct, correct, regardless of any conviction?
They could, Your Honor. Yes, that's correct. However, the underlying conduct testified to Mr. Cruz Rodriguez described in the court the underlying conduct and how he differed from what was in the police reports. What wasn't permitted was his wife's testimony. Because of the Danko that was put in place, which is an automatic thing in state court under Minnesota Statute 692.75, the Danko was in place. She was not permitted in court.
What was in place?
No contact order. I'm sorry, Your Honor. There's a no contact order. So the immigration judges will not allow her to come to court to testify.
Is that in the record? That seemed interesting. I understand a no contact order between him and his wife, given the charges, but why couldn't she come into court as a witness?
Because they cannot, by the terms of the no contact order, be in the same vicinity of each other. It is in the record.
Why couldn't? Go through, but, I mean, did the alien ask to have her heard without him in the room?
They will not allow
his right to presence so she could be heard.
They will not allow it.
What do you mean, they? Who won't?
The immigration judges. I've had immigration. I mean, it's not in the record, but I've had immigration judges be very adamant that that person can't be in the building. They will not allow it.
Well, you've got to make a record this case.
Well, it is
what you did to try to have her testimony heard, what accommodations were proposed and rejected,
we had
and so forth.
pursuant to the state statute, I, as an attorney, under Subdivision 2, Part 2, a person who knows there's a no-contact order in place, I cannot contact that person. The plain language of the state statute is very clear.
So
I can't contact them.
Just as a matter of information, so if you're representing someone, if you're representing him in state court, there's no way for you to interview the witness, the key witness, if there's a no-contact order?
I can discuss it with the prosecuting authority.
What does that mean?
I can talk to the prosecutor in a state criminal case about whether or not I can talk to their witness and have the permission to speak with them. They're the ones who are controlling their witnesses in that context. In this context, because there's a no-contact order, and my communication with the alleged victim could be construed as communicating through, I'm not permitted to do so. I'm not permitted to call her up and say, can I talk to you about what these allegations a third party made against my client, who is also the defendant in that case, made against you. So I cannot do that. And furthermore, under Chevron, I don't think the court...
You just said that you could do it if you worked through the state prosecutor.
Right. But I was not a party. I was not here. I couldn't do it as his immigration attorney.
How do you know? Did you contact the state prosecutor and say this person has material evidence in an immigration proceeding and I'd like to interview her? Did you make a record on that?
I don't have a record on that, no. However, what I did try to do was have him produced at the criminal proceedings before the judge and resolve it. I could communicate with the prosecutor. Actually, I did communicate. I retract that, Your Honor. There is a record. It is in the record. I had email sent. I can get you the reference, but it is there. I did file four writs requesting her production.
Where?
With the state of Minnesota.
No, I mean production where? You wanted her produced?
I wanted him produced. I apologize if I said her. I wanted him produced
him
so
produced
we
in the
could.
State court.
Correct. During his criminal proceedings, which he has a constitutional right to be at. And ICE did not.
How does the fact that ICE didn't bring him there relate to what the IJ did? Well, how does that create an error by the IJ or the board, rather?
The board stated that the board, especially on the motion remand, stated evidence was not previously available. That evidence being statements and letters and affidavits signed by the alleged victim, Rosa. It was not, saying that was previously available, I apologize. The evidence was not previously available because we could not resolve the matter of Danko, the matter of communicating with her regarding the situation, circumstances about their marriage for 20 plus years and their children, which inhibited the ability of him to have a fundamentally fair hearing to fully present and litigate his requests for cancellation of removal. It was fundamentally unfair, as this court has held in Freeman v. Holder, that which cites, again, the Kipkemboy decision, due process violations occur when there's fundamental unfairness. And a court cannot prohibit the respondent from presenting substantive evidence in support of his claim for relief. Here, the IJ determined he had met his burden for cancellation. The board reversed based on, number one, his tax returns. His tax returns, which are outside the scope of the expertise of the Board of Immigration Appeals and the immigration judge. They are not and should not be allowed, that decision should not be allowed Chevron deference. He testified that he went to a preparer. The person prepared his taxes based on what he had told. That these people claimed as dependents were supported more than 50% by his finances. They were in Mexico. That's permitted by the IRS under regulations we had submitted into evidence. And so, but It was a continual argument of the department and the respondents in this matter that there was tax fraud. Immigration Judge Wood correctly noted that tax law is a very complex matter, and it's a very convoluted, complex issue, and thus it would require some sort of expert testimony, and it's outside the purview of the board. In addition, I just want to make a point on throughout their responsive briefs, the respondent argues this court does not have jurisdiction due to the fact that cancellation under 42B involves discretionary relief. Again, discretionary relief, we can assert that his constitutional rights were impeded, again, under Freedman v. Holder and Caballero-Martinez v. Barr, just decided by this court April 3rd, 2019, that his denial of his opportunity to present fully present and litigate his request for this relief, and the evidence that would have been submitted would have likely changed the outcome, that cannot be sustained. And so the argument that this is not before the court and the court does not have jurisdiction is not true. The board even acknowledges that in their decision on the motion to reopen, quote, this issue regarding ICE and their violations of law, the lawful orders of the state of Minnesota, is beyond the purview of the board. In fact, they're going, and furthermore, just to point out to the court, the respondents state that the issue is not exhausted before the board. I would submit that we did raise the due process arguments before the board, before the IJ. Furthermore, the U.S. Supreme Court in Sims v. Apfel, APFEL, 530 U.S. 103 from 2000, discusses administrative exhaustion versus issue exhaustion, in that we fully went through the administrative exhaustion part, and that issue exhaustion is not required for this court to take jurisdiction over our due process arguments. And lastly, is that there's an issue about sovereign immunity, qualified immunity, with the department and the respondents acting in violation of the law. They violated, if any individual were walk in and just flagrantly disregard a order of the state of Minnesota, they'd be arrested and detained. The agents for ICE in this matter acted outside of their constitutionally mandated authority. They have the right to detain and hold aliens who are in violation of law, which I will concur that the petitioner was in this matter, but they don't have the authority to deny him his constitutional rights in dealing with his criminal matters in the state of Minnesota. And if there's nothing more right now, I'll reserve the rest for.
Very well. You may.
Thank you.
Ms. Wellhoff, we'll hear from you.
Good morning. Ann Wellhoff for Respondent, United States Attorney General Barr. Before this court are two decisions. The underlying merits decision in this case dated February 28th. The board did two things in that decision. It made two independently dispositive rulings. One, it held that on the facts and circumstances of this case, the petitioner did not warrant, as a matter of discretion, the relief in the form of cancellation of removal. Additionally, the board also said that he did not warrant it as a matter of the statute. He didn't comply with the statutory requirements. Either one of those would fully dispose of his cancellation application.
When you say the statutory requirements, are you talking about the good moral character conclusion?
Yes. The board held that he did not satisfy that under the catch-all provision of Section 1101F. There's several categorical exclusions, but they're not exclusive.
Can I ask you about that? The board says that it reviews the IJ's determination on that de novo. Is there not a... Does the board not review the IJ's fact-finding underlying that for clearly erroneous standard?
Sure. The ultimate answer to the question whether he meets the legal requirements for cancellation is a legal question, but any factual findings that need be made en route to deciding that are reviewed for clearly erroneous and would be before the court here on substantial evidence.
Do you think that the board did that? Did it come out and expressly say where it disagreed with the fact finding of the IJ and where?
I believe that the board did not disagree with the fact finding. The board disagreed with the weight to put on the evidence and the ultimate question of whether or not he was entitled to discretionary relief. But the facts were, there was no, board didn't make any new or different fact findings. In fact,
opposing counsel kind of expanded, discussed the tax return issue. Did the board expand on, is that just an expansion of the fact finding you think that the IJ did?
Well, no, I think if you read the immigration judge's decision where he did initially grant relief, he says he's very disturbed by the way that Mr. Cruz filed his taxes. He says that, the record is replete with Mr. Cruz testifying that, you know, he kept all the books in his restaurant. He went to extensive training with Perkins. He quote unquote on page 292 says, I was in charge of all of the accounts for the restaurant. Yet,
all this evidence was presented to the immigration judge and the BIA.
The issue, what he did on his tax return wasn't something technical that required expertise. He called dependents his children when they were not his children. This is not a matter, this is a smart man. He has run businesses. He keeps accounts. He's not that unsophisticated.
Did he call the nieces and nephews children, or did he call them dependents?
He called them children on the tax return. And when asked why he did this, he said, well, we didn't know what we were doing when we first got here in America, but he did this for 15 years. At some point, he had to figure out that these people who were not living with him at all, weren't even in the U.S., were not his children, yet he did 15 years, he put that down. Secondly, I would note that the immigration judge, the notion that this petitioner was in any way precluded from presenting his case or appearing in his criminal case, I submit it is not a colorable legal or constitutional argument, and it is absolutely, even if you want to consider it, not supported by the factual record in this case. In fact, if you look at the administrative record at page 297, the judge specifically asks, he says, hey, and I want to clarify, Mr. Nielsen was also petitioner's attorney in the criminal case. He was uniquely positioned to communicate with the prosecution and ensure whatever needed to be done on the criminal side to get his witnesses together could be done. He was handling both cases. The judge specifically asked Mr. Nielsen, have you been trying to get petitioner out of ICE custody and back to the sheriff's custody? And the petitioner's attorney says, yeah, I've been working with the prosecutor to do this. Petitioner's attorney says he's going to try and resolve all those issues with the criminal court. The judge tells Mr. Nielsen, that he's really concerned about this police report. And he tells him that, and this is on page 296 and 297 of the administrative record. And I will add that the police report was Mr. Nielsen's exhibit. The government didn't proffer that. The judge admits the police report and He says to petitioner on page 296 and 97, he says, look, I want to understand the nature of exactly what happened here. There certainly appears to be probable cause to believe that he engaged in this conduct that's alleged, beating his wife. The judge says that I understand their allegations in the report, but I want to understand the nature of these events. And he specifically tells him.
I think your page numbers must be off.
Administrative record 296.
Are you referring to the appendix that we have, or no?
Oh, the administrative record?
I don't know. We have an appendix, but you're referring to something else.
Oh, I was referring to the administrative record as in our brief. The judge, you will see the judge tells petitioner, his attorney, you need to do what you got to do to get Mrs. Cruz over here to testify. I know there's a protective order, but you should file some kind of a motion, or there's got to be a way to do this. And petitioner's counsel says to the judge, yeah, I'm trying to resolve everything like that with the criminal court. The immigration judge tells petitioner, he asked for a copy of that protective order just because he wants to know whether it does preclude the testimony and any documents that are related to the current charges. And again, petitioner, at least two places in the record, petitioner's counsel tells the immigration judge he's working with the prosecution to secure her testimony, but he never does. He never shows up with it. He does show up with an affidavit from her where she says she's not afraid of petitioner.
Do the immigration courts not permit folks coming in if there's a no contact? Has that been your experience as in Minnesota?
And it would be most prudent, and the judge did that in this case, if he is made aware there is a protective order. He did tell petitioner, I don't want her to come into the courtroom until you can secure release from that on the criminal side. And I think that's prudent. I don't know that I can say it's in the immigration judge manual, but I mean, that's just kind of sort of makes good sense.
Why does it make?
If there's a protective order and they're not supposed to be in this.
How do you get her evidence then?
Well, if there's a protective order saying she can't come within X number of feet of her, then he would have to go to the criminal court and say, my hands are tied. I need her testimony. She's dying to supposedly.
At the bottom line, her testimony was not received. Is that what you're saying?
She did not come in and testify. We don't know why. The judge encouraged it and said, please work with the prosecutor to allow, if she wants to testify, perhaps they can modify the protective order and she can come in and testify. And he never did that. And the judge even told him, the immigration judge said, without her testimony, I'm going to have to draw a negative inference.
You're talking about Mr. Rodriguez saying that this is his testimony.
I'm sorry? The police report was in evidence, and basically the immigration judge did want to hear from Ms. Cruz, but the petitioner's attorney made the court aware of a protective order and said, I can't bring her in. And the judge, and there was at least two conversations on the record where the judge said, can't you file a motion to say you need her testimony? There could have been some way to get her testimony, and he just came back. And in fact, the judge told petitioner's counsel that my biggest concern are two things. This, you need to come back and tell me, you know, you need to do what you can to proffer her testimony, because the judge really wanted to know what exactly happened during this incident. They had the police report.
Which judge is this? The
immigration judge. Yeah, the immigration judge was I believe you'll find when you read the record, bending over backwards to accommodate. At one point, he told petitioner, how long do you need to try and get this? I really am concerned about, one, you didn't even file the 2016 taxes, or your client didn't. He said, I want him to do that. Two, I want him to work on getting the testimony of the wife. How long do you need to do this? And petitioner's attorney responds on administrative record, page 358, not long. I'm just concerned about petitioner's, he has surgery upcoming, so we have to work around that. Again, he's not concerned about doesn't seem concerned at all. There's no, the immigration judge is not rushing this along. The bottom line is that petitioner.
Can the immigration judge find a way to get testimony from someone, even if there's a no contact order in place? The lawyer can't, for the alien, can't necessarily control what the state court is going to require as far as contact or no contact. Doesn't the immigration proceeding have some mechanism they could use to hear from her, even if there's a no contact order?
Well, I suppose that they could have issued a subpoena or something, but I think the judge was trying to be sensitive to the situation. This is a woman who has accused her husband of beating her, and there was a pretty violent incident, and I think the judge was...
You have to be present when she testifies?
Well, I mean, he could have taken care of that, too, but again...
What do you mean he could have taken care of it?
He could have... I'm not sure. He has a right to hear the witnesses. It depends on what she was going to say. If she was testifying against him, we don't really know what the wife was going to say. But
Can he waive his right to presence if it's necessary to get her in? I don't understand why you guys couldn't work out getting her testimony.
Well, I think the judge wanted to hear from the wife. We have the police report, and petitioner was denying none of that happened. Absolutely. Petitioner said every single thing that he threw to the ground, he choked her. The police documented she had bruises and scratches all over her body. This is written by the police. The police documented that she told them there was prior instances of abuse. It documents that she had been assigned a community advocate to reach out to if her husband was abusing her again so that she... could contact the police on her behalf. He's saying none of that happened. There's no record evidence that he made any efforts to bring her into court. Petitioner could have subpoenaed her. He didn't do that. He told the judge he was working with the prosecutor to get possibly file a motion and get the protective order released so she could come within X number of feet of him and testify, but he didn't do that.
What about the state charges? When why wasn't he transferred for purposes of the state? Is he in a different holding facility for immigration hold than he would be for the state?
The petitioner was initially apprehended and held by the state, then released on bond and turned over to ICE custody. There's no factual basis in this record to say that ICE defied lawful state orders. All we have are a few emails where apparently at some point petitioner's attorney was trying to get a writ of, I believe, habeas to release petitioner so he could attend one of his criminal hearings. And ICE's response was, in order to do this, we need XYZ language. There's no factual evidence that ICE was defying any court orders. I mean, putting aside the sovereign immunity and the issue of whether a state court can order the federal agents to do something, I don't even want to get into that, but there's simply
there was nothing from the state court that said...
No, there's emails.
That we have a trial on this date.
No.
Did he miss any court hearings as a result?
Not to my knowledge, and in fact, no, it's not in the record. And at one point, at two different times in the administrative record transcript at the immigration trial stage, the immigration judge asks petitioner, asked petitioner's counsel, was Mr. Cruz able to appear and make his appearance? Is he able to attend his criminal proceedings? And petitioner's counsel says, yes. He doesn't say there's any problems. Another time, he specifically asks, have you been making efforts? Again, this is administrative record 297. Ask petitioner's counsel, have you been making efforts to get him released from ICE custody, maybe transfer him back to the state so that he can resolve his criminal case first? And petitioner's counsel says, yeah, I'm working with the prosecutor on that. There's no indication at all during the immigration proceeding that there's any problems whatsoever with one petitioner trying to appear in his criminal case.
Okay, your time has expired. I'd ask you to take a look at your page number. So I'm looking right at the record here.
Okay.
You say page 358, I see a Wells Fargo bank statement. You're quoting things from page 297, and they're not on the page 297 in the certified record that's filed with our court. So it would be helpful if you could clear that up.
Okay. On page 297, you don't have a transcript of the administrative record?
Page 297 is part of a transcript.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the quotes that you're...
Well, this is where the immigration just asked, have you been getting him out of...
Yeah, that's not on my page 297, so I don't know what pagination you're using.
I'm using the... Okay, I'm using the administrative record that was filed in this case.
I see. And your page 358 has a transcript too, huh?
Let me check. Yes, it does. And this is where the judge asks
All right, I understand the pagination. We've got an electronic copy of a certified record, and it doesn't match what you're quoting from. So I don't know what to say about that other than it's hard to follow.
I apologize. Is there any chance that that is the appendix you're looking at, the petitioner put together? Because he put a fairly lengthy one together, but we submitted the administrative record.
Yeah, maybe that's a problem.
Okay.
We'll figure it out. Thank you for your
Thank argument. You very much.
It could be that the two parties filed different things. I don't know why would you file an appendix that's got different pagination from the certified record? You file an appendix, Mr. Nielsen?
You
filed this big, lengthy appendix right here?
Yes, that's the same thing as the administrative record that I received.
Same pagination, or did you?
Yes, sure.
I don't think it is, but maybe the two of you could get together and see if you filed the same page numbers.
Actually, Your Honor, I can see here that page 61 on the red whatever is the same as my page 61, and this is a certified.
Your page 358 is a Wells Fargo bank statement.
And I know my 297 is, if it's from a discussion, Ms. Bly and the judge, okay. That is, and a three, what page was that?
358.
Yes, Your Honor. Wells Fargo.
Yeah, she says 358 is a transcript quotation.
I was trying to find those quotations as well, and I don't know where they came from.
I think you two should get together and not file different appendices with different pagination. All it does is confuse things. We ought to have one record that's the same page numbers for everybody.
Correct. These are the page numbers I have been using the entire time.
I know they're the ones you've been using. That's why there's confusion. But I don't know whose are correct. So go ahead. Do you want to make rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. Please. Very briefly, Judge Kelly, yes. I believe initially you had asked about the expounding by the BIA on the factual record. I think that is correct. Unfortunately, I didn't have enough time to go through all that. But yes, the findings by the IJ that there's a complexity in the United States tax code with whether or not they're regular was found. I think the BIA did engage in additional facts, impermissible fact finding, or did not use appropriate standard. Second, I want to address, and use the remainder of my time to address the government counsel's statements regarding my representation of Mr. Cruz in the criminal matter. That is correct. I represented him. When she states that I was attempting to get him in, that is correct. Page in the record with the second case in this matter, there are five pages of emails going back and forth with ICE supervisors at ICE. It's page 61 in the record submitted. I was extremely frustrated. To say I wasn't is a complete mischaracterization of everything I did in this case. And I really object to that one, but to say I filed and filed and I used exact language of ICE every single time they refused it. The sheriff in Dakota County says, I don't know why ICE is doing this. It's in the email. I made a record. I was incredibly frustrated throughout these proceedings at the lack of cooperation and lack of response I was receiving from ICE. I have done this hundreds of times before to writ out a person so I can go to court in the state to modify something. The state court is not proceeding without the defendant present unless there's – without the defendant present. We missed the fact – what the allegation that Mr. Cruz did not miss court state court criminal hearings is completely and utterly false. He missed four. I can state that with 100% clarity. The register of accidents is in here. I do not know if it reflects it, but I know 100% I was there. He did not make his criminal court appearances because ICE refused to transport him. Just, I don't know if the court will allow me one little second more to state on the logistical things. Basically, ICE holds him in Sherburne County to get him from ICE custody into state custody. They have to take him from Sherburne County, drive him down, take him to Fort Snelling, transfer custody in the ICE offices to the state facility because of security and making sure his property and all these types of things. It's a very systematic procedure. Then he's transferred into the state custody, taken to whatever county in the state of Minnesota he needs to go to make his appearance. He stays there for as long as is necessary. Once that's resolved, then he goes back to ICE custody in Fort Snelling, Minnesota, is redressed and reassigned a facility in one of the ICE detention facilities that they have a contract with. And I thank you, Your Honors, and I will rest on the rest of
the papers. Very well. The case is submitted.